Chili and onion farmers in southern New Mexico have faith in many ways. I think of this fact as I munch on world-famous Hatch Valley chili and onions. Day after day, these farmers get up and do what needs to be done. They have faith in several things beyond traditional religion. Don't get me wrong, they're on their knees, often in prayer to the good Lord. But there is something else. Faith is not exclusive to religion, since there is also religion and faith in farming. Michael Swickard here. Welcome to Enchanting Stories of New Mexico, sponsored by the Fresh Chili Company in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Our award-winning Hatch green and red chili, boy, is it good. It's from locally owned farms in Hatch, New Mexico, the chili capital of the world, and we also have some of the sweetest onions in the world. Today I'm talking about farmer, and I might add rancher, religion. Not their traditional belief in God, but certainly a religion that people who farm and ranch must have, given how much of their livelihood is not within their control. What they produce and what they get in compensation is many months, even years apart. Let me tell a story. Many years ago, I was living in Camarillo, California, and I was the manager of a computer land there, selling computers. One of my clients was a farmer, and we talked about farming and ranching, since my grandfather had a ranch near Carrizozo, New Mexico, and I spent many summers there, and I also lived in Carrizozo in Capitan as an adult. My friend, named Will, used his computer in many ways tied to his farming. It was interesting that as a Vietnam veteran, he was attracted to the very quiet life of a farmer, and so he grew lemons, oranges, and avocados. His biggest direct problem was that coyotes found the avocados delicious, since avocados are about 15% oil. Until I became friends with Will, I didn't know the avocado was the official fruit of the state of California, much like the chili peppers are the fruit of New Mexico. I helped him with his coyote problem, since they could take all the profit out of an avocado harvest. I found it interesting that he was constantly looking at the weather maps all over the United States, since the value of his lemons and his oranges depended upon the crops in other states having difficulties. He said it was hard to root for snow in Florida, but if it did hamper those crops, well, then that's a good thing. He came into the Computerland store after a snowstorm in Florida and bought a new 386 top-of-the-line computer. Yes, a 386, and Ronald Reagan was the president back then. I'm talking about a long time ago. And I bet the coyotes are still a problem with the avocado farmers in Southern California. My friend Will depended upon a certain set of things that he worked when he worked on his large fields that were completely out of his control. So his faith in farming was what kept him and his wife going when there were problems, which all farmers have. There are pests, and there's too much or too little rain, or plant viruses, the price fluctuations, it goes on and on. Likewise, every day it's something, and the farmers in southern New Mexico face many of the same challenges, though I'm not sure coyotes have developed much of a taste for chili or onions. I'll check into that and let you know. When you look at the number of variables that impact crops grown in southern New Mexico, you see how much faith these farmers and ranchers must have. And for that, I am very thankful. Michael Swickard here, Enchanting Stories of New Mexico, where we talk about people and times special to New Mexico. Hit subscribe to automatically get these podcasts. I was asked by some people about those people that are coming through southern New Mexico on I-10. It's a major highway. Some people drive right on by our little slice of paradise here. Some people, I would call them the lucky ones, stop and enjoy some great red and green chili in our restaurants. As I said, the lucky ones. Even luckier is if you just happen to live here as I do. People have been traveling through this area on an assortment of roads for most of 160 years. Did you know that the I-10 section of road from El Paso to Deming was a road for people going east to west and west to east since 1858? Yes, 1858. The travelers were going much faster these days than they were back in 1858. You see, a government contract was awarded to the Butterfield Overland Mail Company to deliver the mail from St. Louis to San Francisco, take passengers, and they were going through El Paso and Las Cruces. That contract was in 1857, and it had to be done quicker than several months, which is what it was taking then. The first time they did it, it was 3,000 miles in 24 days. The Butterfield Overland Mail System officially began in 1858 with twice a week sets of stagecoaches going east to west and west to east. There were 9 bids, and the contract number 12578 was awarded September 16, 1857, to one John Butterfield Sr. of Ithaca, New York. He had a year to get it all set up. By September 16, 1858, he had to start his 6-year contract. Now, think of all the things he had to do. He had to select the path the stagecoaches would take on all those miles, decide where to place the stations, buy the horses and mules, hire the people who would work in the routes, both operating the stations and those that were there to provide the hay and water and food for each station. In all, there was about 1,500 employees in 175 stations. He did all of this, get this, and kept track of every day detail before computers or telephones. I didn't think they even had ballpoint ink pens back then. He did it all. Some places, like the Las Cruces Butterfield Station, was already built and just had to be fixed up for the venture, while many others had to be built from the ground up, including digging the wells for water, building the animal pens, and building the station and the support buildings. He had about 100 stage coaches and wagons that were going to be used. He was going to have a stop about every 30 miles, depending on the terrain. The company spent somewhere in the range of $1 million of 1857 dollars getting started. That would be somewhere around $37 million in today's dollars. Now, the hard part was about 2,000 miles of mostly wilderness, which included the dangers of attack upon the stations and stagecoaches. Remember, back then, there was not GPS at all. There wasn't even really, really good maps. Much of that area was a wilderness, was a U.S. territory, and was not actually a U.S. state. While it was picturesque riding in a stagecoach, I've thought about this, it could not have been fun with 3 people on each side. Have you ever noticed how small those stagecoaches were? They were small people, but boy, they were packed into there. They scrunched together, holding their luggage, a blanket, a canteen of water in their lap, and bags of mail. Remember, that was what it was there to do, was transport mail. They'd have a few minutes to walk around while the horses were being changed every so often. Sleep. Yeah, you slept, but you were wedged by the 2 other people on your side of the stagecoach. They averaged about 100 miles each day. The trip took about 25 days. The cost of the trip then in 1858 dollars was $200. That would be about $7,500 today. You got 25 pounds of baggage that you could carry. The meals over that 25 days were said to be poor at best. And you got lucky once in a while when somebody was a good cook. You had beans and biscuits, but mostly that wasn't it that they have. They didn't have any good green chili, which would have been delightful. Now, there was a driver and a conductor with a shotgun and 3 pairs of horses pulling each coach, and you just went the whole time. You didn't stop and stay overnight. Michael Swigert here, Enchanting Stories of New Mexico, where we talk about people and times that are special to New Mexico. you can hit subscribe to automatically get these podcasts. I'm talking about traveling through southern New Mexico 160 years ago by stagecoach. What a treat to get to California in less than a month, and to get San Francisco to St. Louis also in just a few weeks of travel. But what traveling it was. I suspect, and I read something where one trip was plenty, they didn't ever want to do it again. The stagecoaches left each terminal, that was St. Louis and San Francisco, twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays, with freight, mail, and passengers. At any one moment, there were about 30 stagecoaches on the trails east to west and west to east that kept the stations busy, caring for all of this going on and taking care of the horses. And for a few moments, the hungry passengers, and how can I say it delicately? I can't. As to bathrooms, no, they were just wide open spaces. But the Butterfield Overland Company put southern New Mexico and Las Cruces firmly on the map, and people started to see how nice our area was. A few people at a time moved to southern New Mexico for the weather, for the sunlight, and for the great chili. Oh, I made the last part up. The chili did impress some people, and the ground red chili to mix with when you made beans was a staple of the traveling cuisine, and it was also picked up by the trail herds. They liked that red chili they could put in the beans. It was powdered and really flavored the beans. While it was a going venture, since the other way to go east to west and west to east was a nine-month ship around the southern part of South America, that was very risky. Or you could ship to Panama and take a trip across the Isthmus of Panama, swatting mosquitoes that often led to death of people. You could go overland east to west in a Conestoga wagon, also risky and very hard. So taking the mail in 3 weeks was a great advantage to business people and especially to the military. This all stopped with the start of the Civil War in 1861. And after the Civil War, people still wanted to go west to east, east to west. And mostly the people after the Civil War, in 1869, the Transcontinental Railroad went through Colorado and to the west. And that's what people used. It also is what transported all the mail. So the stagecoaches didn't start back up except very small trips here and there. And they weren't through southern New Mexico until the train tracks came through El Paso, Las Cruces, and they formed Deming on the way to the coast in the 1880s. Then, when people came through our area, the chili was served. Let's talk about the Fresh Chili Company in Las Cruces. They sponsor these New Mexico History and Culture podcasts. Something great is happening in the Hatch Valley. The chili has been planted. It isn't always where it was planted before, but it's going right now. From 1913 and onward, the chili crop been planted. I smile when I think of all that great chili that's about to be picked in about 70 days, roasted, and then we will have it on our enchiladas, among other things. There's still a lot of chili for sale at the Fresh Chili Company website and various stores. Some of the chili has sold out. I still have a couple jars of my favorite, which is Big Jim Green and Red. But I have to tell you something new, which is I find the 575 medium red and green just as tasty as my favorite Big Jim blend. So I have that 575. It's on everything but Jell-O. Maybe I'll try it on Jell-O one of these days. I'll let you know about that. One thing that happens when people live in Las Cruces or they're in our area, they can come by the Fresh Chili Company's gift shop, 1160 El Paseo Road, Suite D7. It's open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can come by the Fresh Chili Company gift shop. There's a big sign over the entrance so you can see it. I even give tours of the facility. You got to email ahead. I'm the tour guide. Tell a lot of stories about all these things. This is Michael Swickard with Enchanting Stories of New Mexico, brought to you by the Fresh Chili Company. Thank you for your time today. We'll always have lots of news and stories about New Mexico for you on these podcasts. If you have something or someone you want me to talk about, write to me, michael@freshchilico.com. michael@freshchilico.com. Have a great rest of your day. Oh, yes, and eat plenty of that good Hatch Valley chili. Like I always say, some chili is good, more is better, as long as it's Hatch Valley chili. Bye for now.